Case is scheduled on the 9 o'clock docket. Bennett versus ICAO and Mullen versus Allstate. Are the attorneys present on each case?
Yes.
All right. You should have been provided a handout of our procedures. I believe we have two appellees on the first case. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
You've decided how you're going to divide up the time?
I'm going to treat the city of Colorado Springs. I'll be presenting the argument. If the court has any questions directed towards the attorney general,
okay, that's fine. If anyone in the courtroom has a cell phone or pager, please make sure it's turned off so it doesn't interrupt us, and let's begin with Bennett.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Patty Ragland. I represent Mr. Bennett in this case. Mr. Bennett, as you know, was an officer of the police force for the city of Colorado Springs when he was injured in 1996. He went on to continue to work after his initial period of disablement and was later found to be permanently and totally disabled during 2007. At the time that the issue of the average weekly wage for the subsequent periods of disablement was determined by the administrative law judge in this particular case, the opinion in Avalanche had not yet been disseminated by the Supreme Court, nor had the opinion of this court in Simpson been disseminated at that point. It is appropriate to note that the ICAP also did not have the benefit of those decisions at the time that their opinion was rendered in this particular matter. The judge below made the determination that there were no material questions of fact in this case, that at all relevant periods, Mr. Bennett was entitled to receive the maximum benefit rate that was allowed under the statute at all relevant periods of disablement. In this particular case, Mr. Bennett should be entitled to receive the increase of those wages that he earned and persevered through his disablement, just as it was done in the Simpson and in Avalanche. We believe that the findings of fact entered by the administrative law judge in this particular case demonstrate that he felt constrained by the previous interpretation of that statute by the courts below, and therefore did not exercise his full right of discretion in rendering his opinion. We ask that this court consider remand so that the judge may be allowed to exercise his full rights of discretion in analyzing the facts in this particular case, and to allow the judge to determine whether the facts and his, as used by his and applied to his discretion, would modify the determination made by the administrative law judge now that the cases of Avalanche and Simpson has been decided. I would like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
All right, you have 12 minutes and 52 seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Paul Krug. I'm the attorney for City of Colorado Springs. Avalanche Industries versus Clark has been stretched far too thin in this case. The Avalanche case was an average weekly wage case, pure and simple. It did not involve someone who was at the max statutory rate. It did not involve the question of whether or not the statutory maximum rates should be applied to an individual for subsequent disabilities. It did not address that issue at all. That's the issue in the present case. Here, the claimant was at the max rate on the date of the accident, the date of the injury. Where Avalanche is essentially being applied by the claimant is the Section C of the opinion. And in Section C, the Colorado Supreme Court, for the first time, held that there could actually be a second injury in one workers' compensation claim based upon the date of disability. And what the Colorado Supreme Court held in that the ALJ, if that is what is found, that there's a new disability, would be bound by the average weekly wage on that date. So for example, in our case where the claimant was injured in 1996, we have the statutory maximum for that date. The claimant wants to apply Avalanche Section C in that when he was permanently and totally disabled 11 years later, that you would use the statutory maximum for 2007, and that the ALJ would be bound to use his average weekly wage on that date. And in fact, in the petitioner's, the appellant's opening brief, the very last line before the conclusion states that's what Avalanche Section C stands for, that we have to use the average weekly wage for that date. That can't be the law. And here's why. First, in this case, it benefits the claimant. He was earning a higher average weekly wage 11 years later. What of the situation where a claimant, when his condition worsens and he has a new disability, isn't working? He's unemployed. The recession has laid him off, or even his injury has caused him restrictions that he can no longer work, and he's determined to be permanently and totally disabled at that time. What Section C would then hold, if it was applied, is that the claimant would have a zero average weekly wage, because the ALJ would be compelled, would be bound by the average weekly wage on that date. Now, that can't possibly be the law. That is certainly unfair for a claimant, an injured worker, whose natural progression of his original injury has actually worsened, and he gets no permanent total disability benefits.
But under Avalanche, in a case like that, wouldn't the ALJ have the discretion to say, yes, that isn't unfair, and so I'm going to apply the discretionary subsection of the statute instead?
Well, the discretion, because in subsection C, they talk about in 842.104 that when there's a subsequent disability, you use wages attached to that subsequent disability. Here, there are no wages, and an ALJ would be, his discretion would be necessarily bound by the act, the provision the Colorado Supreme Court cited and relied upon in Section C. And so the discretion can only involve the claimant's wages during that period of time. And he could be earned.
I'm intrigued by your statement that that can't be the law. I mean, what do we do as an intermediate appellate court where we've got a Supreme Court opinion that seems to say that is the law?
You apply the one that's more on point, and that's Bellinger. In Bellinger, the Colorado Supreme Court was specifically asked, using the same policy arguments being made in the briefs, that a person's statute, it's unfair for an injured worker's statutory maximums to remain the same when an injured worker a couple of years later may have the same injury, may have been earning the same wage, and yet he's receiving more benefits.
But wasn't Bellinger really dealing with a constitutional claim that we don't have here?
But it's more on point in so much as what the Colorado Supreme Court ultimately held is that the statutory maximums, they addressed that policy argument and recognized that, okay, that does look a bit unfair, but the statutory maximums are set on the date of accident. The Supreme Court used that terminology in that opinion, date of accident. And that's when, and then at that point they held that this is a question for the General Assembly. The state maximums are set by statute. They're set by the director pursuant to statutory authority. If that's going to be changed some way, it needs to be done by the legislature. And it was the exact same argument here today. And Avalanche, importantly, to the extent, and again, we get back, the question in this case is the statutory maximums. It's not adjusting the claimant's average weekly wage.
Well, there's really two things going on here, aren't there? I mean, on the one hand, the claimant seems to be making an argument that the benefits can be changed on a yearly basis. And then the second argument is, as I heard it in oral argument today, is, well, you've got to take into account the Supreme Court's opinion in Avalanche and as applied by Simpson that maybe there's, you can have one or two dates of injury depending on the facts of the case. So remand for the ALJ to make factual findings about when the injury and disablement were. That's a different issue from do you make these adjustments on a yearly basis?
Only if you go by the holding that there can be multiple dates of injury. And I understand in Avalanche, certainly in Section C, made that determination. But I would continue to hold that because the discussion in Section C was so limited and did not address the myriad of issues that can arise in such a situation, the statute of limitations, if there's a new date of injury, a date of disablement, the statute, that's what the statute of limitations are based on. Then it goes for another 6 years. Effective dates of legislation oftentimes they're effective the dates of injury. You could have one claimant with different legislation applying different ways throughout his claim. And in the Simpson opinion, I think, and this is an alternative, I don't believe Section C is a holding. I don't believe that can be the law. But to the extent this court is going to follow Simpson, the Simpson opinion has a reasonable alternative in so much as there can be two dates, the date of the accident and the date of the disablement. This case doesn't need to be remanded because the factual findings demonstrate the date of injury was in 1996 and the claimant began receiving temporary total disability in 1996.
Well, you just changed the terminology. You said there can be two dates, the date of the accident and the date of disablement. And
right.
And then you said the date of injury was in 1996. And as I understand Avalanche and Simpson, they say, you know, you, in light of those opinions, you've got, the ALJ has got to make factual findings when the date, because the statute uses the term date of injury.
Correct. And you're absolutely right to point that out. The date of accident in this case was found by the ALJ was in May of 1996. The ALJ also made findings that the date temporary total disability started was in 1996 as well.
But he didn't have the benefit of the Avalanche opinion when those findings were made.
Well, the question then becomes Avalanche opinion in Section C, and again, this goes back to the argument that I just don't believe Section C was well thought out enough to be a holding. They laid no guidance as to what a disability is. Do you go back to the compensability determination? In a workers' compensation claim, an injury is only compensable. An injury is compensable if it arises out of the course and scope of the employment. Is that the guidance for the administrative law judge? There's a theory in workers' compensation that if there is an intervening event which severs the causal connection, that's a different standard. In other words, if the claimant is working for one employee when the accident occurs and then a few years later works for a new employer and gets hurt again to the same body part, well, that could be, if I'm defending the first employer, I'm saying there's an intervening event. We don't have to pay anything anymore. Well, is that the standard? There's absolutely no guidance in Avalanche whatsoever, but to the extent it's going to be followed, they use the term disability. And there's no question in this fact, in this case, that the claimant was temporarily totally disabled. He missed time from work. That's the definition that's used for the statute of limitations. Have you missed time from work? Have you been disabled? And in here, there's no question it was in 1996. To the extent that is going to be, in the absence of any other reasonable or recognizable standard announced by the Supreme Court, the only guidance we have is the terminology disabled. He was disabled in 1996. He was receiving TTD benefits. And importantly, the claimant also makes the argument, well, it's the ultimate disabled. Here, the ultimate disablement was permanent total disability benefits. So that's unworkable because clearly not every claimant is permanently and totally disabled. An individual may have an accident, be temporarily disabled, receive permanent disability benefits a year later worsens, then gets back to maximum medical improvement, and never becomes permanently and totally disabled. Has he not received, sustained the subsequent disability because he's not permanently and totally disabled? The Supreme Court didn't differentiate. They didn't say the average weekly wage can be adjusted when there's a new permanent disability, when someone is permanently and totally disabled. They simply used the term disability.
So isn't that, but it gets back to my question then, isn't that very fact specific? And the ALJ will just have to make factual findings on when the one or two points of disablement were in any given case?
Well, in this particular case, we have, I would respectfully submit that we have that factual finding. It's undisputed. He was on temporary total disability in 1996. He was missing time from work due to the workers' compensation injury. There's your disability. In Simpson, the Simpson court acknowledged that in some cases there could be an accident, and 6 months later, the person could be disabled. It could be a year. You could have modified duty and continue to work for your employer and never miss time from work. Then you have surgery on your lower back. That happens often. A year later, then, you're disabled. Well, there you have the 2 days.
But why is this case different from Simpson? Simpson had the same problem, didn't it?
To be honest, I don't know if this argument was made. Here we have, I don't know the...
I guarantee you.
I understand you're on that court, Your Honor. But I'm making it more, maybe more assertively, that here we have a finding of disability. That's undisputed by all the parties. In 1996, the claimant was disabled. So to that extent, we have the 2 days. We have the accident, and we have the disability. There is nothing in Avalanche, which indicates there can be a half dozen, which, quite frankly, which is what it would be in this case, the underlying facts. I mean, the claimant went back, left work, came back to work, left work, came back to work. He had a very difficult recovery, or he had a very difficult claim. Ultimately, he wasn't recovered. The employer and the claimant tried. They worked together. His wages went up. It was actually, the system worked in a lot of ways. But ultimately, this would be a case where if you looked at each period where he reached MMI, then returned to TTD, if opposing counsel's argument would be followed, we'd have 6 or 7 dates of injury. That simply can't be. And again, I keep using that. I can't think of a more artful legal way to say it, but that can't be the law. And that's why I know to argue dicta in a Supreme Court opinion where that section has its own designated letter, Section C, is a tough argument to make. But the difficulty that all the parties are having, both in the Simpson case and in this case, I hope enlightens this panel on how groundbreaking that portion of the opinion was. And I attached the pre-hearing administrative law judge Craig Ely's article on that opinion, where he detailed, a workers' compensation expert detailed, this is a mammoth change. And for the reasons set forth, because there's no guidance, because the end result of Avalanche could be claimants and injured workers with no benefits, that simply can't be the law. And the alternative, should this court follow Simpson, then I think Simpson is clear. There is one date of accident, one date of disability per claim. And here the factual findings are undisputed. The date of accident and the first date of disability were in 1996. Consequently, the statutory maximum that applies to this case, pursuant to the previous Supreme Court opinion, which was not overruled, was not superseded, was not specifically even really addressed in Avalanche, controls. The statutory maximum on that date is the maximum for the entire claim. The opinion should be affirmed. Thank you.
Your Honor, to accept respondent's argument here constrains the definitions in workers' compensation. And while I realize that as practitioners we tend to use an awful lot of acronyms in that particular area of law, the fact of the matter is there is a distinction between the date of injury and the periods of disablement which commence in a claim. Respondents are correct. There were multiple periods of commencement of disability for this individual worker. The worker started with an initial period of disablement when he started to receive temporary disability benefits. However, that period of temporary disability ended and he went back to work and he continued to earn wages and he continued to be a productive member of society and for the employer. However, because of the progression of his condition, he then proceeded to have additional periods of disablement. That doesn't redefine the date of injury. It redefines the period of disablement. And as the case law in IBM Campbell initiated back in 1993 and has been followed since that time, a period of disablement is a reasonable period of time for an administrative law judge to consider as a factual matter towards determination of the applicable average weekly wage. High wage earners should not be a separate category as compared to those who have lower wage earning capacity simply by virtue of the fact that they have higher wages. just as the wage earner in IBM Campbell was entitled to an adjustment on the average weekly wage for each period of disability, so is Mr. Bennett and other workers who have subsequent periods of disability when their wages are increased.
But you don't dispute, do you, that if this were to go back on remand, depending on how the ALJ determines the facts, I suppose it would have to be medical testimony here, a possible result under Avalanche and Simpson is that the date of the accident in 1996 is the date of injury slash disablement, and that would be the date that would be used, just as it was in the original opinion. But in light of the Supreme Court's language in Avalanche as interpreted by Simpson. I mean, that's a possible result based on what the evidence is, isn't that
That
right?
is absolutely a possible result, Your Honor, and I believe that it has to be done based on the discretion of the administrative law judge, just as the statute originally intended. And it has to be a factual scenario based on each individual case. I believe that the court has the obligation and has filled the obligation in both Avalanche and in Simpson to instruct the administrative law judges as to the appropriate application of that discretion. However, in this particular case, I believe that the administrative law judge felt unreasonably constrained and that his discretion was unreasonably constrained based upon prior case law. I believe that case law has been clarified by the court since the entry of his order.
When you said his discretion was constrained, are you saying that he didn't understand whether he should go under the default provision or the discretionary exception?
I believe that the administrative law judge felt that he had the right to be within the discretionary portion of the statute in determining the average weekly wage, and in fact made a determination that at each subsequent period of disablement for this individual, he would have been entitled to an increase in the average weekly wage, but for his belief and understanding that the original date of injury maximum rate controlled. And therefore, he couldn't exercise his discretionary authority to utilize later occurring maximum wage rates based on each period of disablement. I believe that the opinions of Avalanche and Simpson provide a fair assessment, both for industry as well as for the worker, for the carriers, and for society as a whole. It encourages workers to return to work. It encourages employers to take them back to work. It encourages an increase of revenues and resources for the carriers to draw upon for future payment of benefits while still meeting the legislative requirements of assessing a maximum wage rate based upon the final period of disablement. That is what Simpson found. That is what Avalanche suggested that Simpson should find. And I believe it should be applied in this case as well. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.